This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on August 2, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The open session is back in session. Thank you very much. The next matters on our agenda are draft advisory opinions 2012-26 and 2012-28. As noted on the agenda, we are going to talk about these draft advisory opinions today just for discussion purposes only. We're not able to vote on them until after the 10-day comment period expires under 2 USC 437 FD. We intend to keep the public comment period open on these both of these drafts through Tuesday, August 7th. So it will close of business on Tuesday, August 7th, and then we plan to vote on these drafts on a tally vote later that week. So first, we'll turn to Mr. Lutz again from the Office of General Counsel, and I should note joining us this morning are Craig Engel and Brett Kappel, who are here for Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-26, Cooper for Congress, and Mr. Caleb Burns, who's here with CTIA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Agenda Document 12-57 is a draft response to an advisory opinion request filed by Cooper for Congress, Armor Media, and MCUBE. The requesters, an authorized committee, a consulting firm, and a connection aggregator, propose to process and receive contributions by text message. The draft concludes that the requester's proposal would be permissible under the Act and Commission regulations, and that the committee is responsible for determining contributors' eligibility and complying with the Act's reporting and record-keeping provisions. In addition, the Commission has before an advisory opinion request from CTIA, the Wireless Association, on behalf of itself and its member wireless service providers. This request raises questions very similar to those presented by Cooper for Congress, Armor Media, and MCUBE. The Office of General Counsel plans to circulate a draft response to CTIA's advisory opinion request in the very near future. Conditioned on our consideration of any comments received, the Office of General Counsel's recommended draft will likely conclude that CTIA's proposal is permissible under the Act and Commission regulations. The draft's conclusion and reasoning are expected to follow those in Agenda Document 12-57, as well as in the MCUBE advisory opinion that the Commission issued in June, that would be Advisory Opinion 2012-17. We have received three comments on the two requests. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask, a draft came out rather late. You may not have had a chance to look over it with a great deal of depth, but I just wanted to ask, in terms of what you've seen, been able to see so far, to what extent does this address the concerns that you have about the clarity? Both requesters have concerns about of clarifying the earlier advisory opinions on with respect to on whose shoulders does the compliance burdens fall, and just from your initial assessment, what concerns or relief do you have from the draft that you've seen so far?
Thank you, Commissioner, and Madam Chairman. I also want to start off by complimenting once again your General Counsel's office for the speed and depth with which they were able to address our opinion, and also the rather great cooperative nature that the General Counsel's Office and CTIA and our requesters had in kind of bringing all of these viewpoints together, because as Commissioner Peterson said, this is a good opportunity to make sure that everyone's responsibilities are buttoned down, because we have three very different players in this pipeline: the candidate committee, the aggregator, and the wireless carriers, each with their own responsibilities and perspectives. And we found that the candidate committees, of course, have the lion's share of the responsibility in making sure that they are in compliance with the Federal Election Campaign Act, because they are federal election committees. And the best way for them to, you know, acquit themselves of their responsibilities is to have this, I think, very good service order that they have negotiated with the aggregator. And then in turn, as you know from the requests, in the draft opinions, these aggregators are entering into equally complex contracts with the wireless carriers themselves. And it's wanting to make sure that the, you know, the carriers and the aggregators and the committees are all in sync with each other. When we last left the commission, the aggregators were very comfortable with the level and depth and complexity of the answers that you were able to give. But we both wanted to kind of reach out, you know, to the left, to our candidate committee clients, and to the right, to our wireless carriers, of whom we are the clients, to make sure the pipeline of information and compliance is complete. And by my reading of what I'll call M-Cube 1 and now M-Cube 2, and what I believe, as Theo kind of hinted at, CTIA 2, that all of those opinions brought together will be very satisfactory. The one question that I would have actually for the commission and for the CTIA Council is our question 5 was answered, in my opinion, very clearly as to what, you know, the question was and what our answer, what your answer was. But it's my hope that the CTIA Council and the commission would be completely in sync on the depth of that answer, because we wouldn't want to miss, you know, an opportunity, especially under the expedited calendar, that we want to make sure that there is no doubt. So that would be actually my question for both the commission and CTIA Council.
Let me jump off from what Craig said on two points. First, commending the efforts of OGC. Pulling all this together in such a short time period, I'm sure was no small feat, and we CTIA very much appreciate your hard work. And then the commission itself, of course, taking the time to quickly consider these advisory opinions on the schedule that you set. The other point I want to jump off from is a substantive one and gets to Commissioner Peterson's question. Are there any gaps, really? You know, do we still have some concerns? And I've had a chance to review the draft, and it looks quite good. The one principal concern I think we still have, and it will be interesting to see what the CTIA 2 draft looks like, as I understand from the OGC presentation, the reasoning will follow the reasoning of the M-Cube 2 draft. It'll be interesting to see if the questions are answered, the questions presented in the CTIA 2 draft, if they're going to be answered directly, or if it's going to be simply a CM-Cube 2. I would hope it would be the former, to again make sure that the questions as presented do get answered. But in terms of the one I think perhaps substantive gap that could be filled is on the very first question raised in CTIA 2 as well as in the M-Cube 2 draft, and that is affirming that responsibility for determining whether or not a contributor is eligible is solely the responsibility of the political committees. I think that's where the commission is trying to go in response to that question, but it would go a long way for CTIA and its wireless service provider members to have that in black and white. And along those same lines, an explicit repeal or superseding, whatever you want to call it, of CTIA 1, which imposed those obligations on the wireless service providers. That is the most critical point from CTIA's perspective that we'd like to see addressed. Otherwise, we think much of what's in this draft is material that we can work with. As Craig mentioned, or perhaps alluded to, I think the response to question 5 could be fleshed out a bit more. And again, if the appropriate vehicle to do that is through the CTIA 2 opinion, and in responding to the questions posed there, it seems to me that would be perfectly adequate.
I would agree with CTIA counsel on that solely comment. And there actually, if I could suggest, on page 9 of the MQ2 draft, on page 9 at lines 13 and 14, I think would be a good opportunity to, you know, say it in black and white if you would like to add the word solely in that sentence. The political committee, not the vendor, would be solely responsible for determining the legality of contributions. And I think that that is probably clearly the case in this particular situation on our particular facts, because of the way in which the contributions are being handled through the factoring process. Now, it may not be perfect because this is a quote from the Jorgensen opinion, but this is exactly the area in which I think we could pinpoint the responsibilities that CTIA counsel had mentioned.
Commissioner McGann?
That still doesn't supplant necessarily the CTIA opinion, right? I mean, if we get, that would also be a place to drop in. And by the way, the CTIA opinion may have made sense if it was based on a 91 opinion. It may have made sense in 91, but it just doesn't make sense anymore.
Precisely. I mean, yeah. I went through the same exercise that Craig did, and my instinct was on page 7, line 28, the very first sentence in response to the question presented is, yes, the committee is responsible for determining. And you can simply put in solely before the word responsible. And then in the place that Craig just identified, that would be the perfect place to indicate how this affects CTIA 1. I mean, that's the portion of the discussion that relates to the commission's past advisory opinions and their relevance to this, to the facts at hand.
I'm sorry, what was the one suggestion you had other than the one that we just referred to?
I was going to page 9.
Got that.
The one that Caleb was referring to?
Yeah, I guess that was the one that...
And it's page 7, simply inserting the word solely in line 28 as the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth word, after is and before responsible.
Okay. Thanks.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we don't have a draft yet on the CTIA opinion, but we do have a comment on the request. And I'm wondering if you've had a chance to read the comment from Revolution Messaging. And I just had it raises a question that I'd like to get your response, either here or in writing, because we have time for comments, and this might be more appropriate for writing. But it deals with the... with whether some political committees may be denied the access to these services and on what grounds. I think that's, and you know, they have characterized it in a certain way, and I don't want to get in the middle of that. But I would like to know if there, I think we premised the CTIA 1 on sort of normal business practices, and I think that's, you know, something that we're generally comfortable with. But to the extent those normal business practices would exclude certain political committees, if you're aware of that, I think I'd like to hear more about that and under what circumstances. Because obviously, if this is something we're going to open up to political committees, it should, from my view, be available to anyone who would want to be able to use it. Obviously, they have to pay for the service. It's not as if, you know, you get it for free, but if you have a response to that, like I said, either now or in writing, I'd appreciate that, the access question.
No, I've got a response to that, and in fact, I think MQ2 addresses that and quite clearly says that as long as reasonable commercial grounds are used to exclude political committees are going to get excluded. The fact that these comments refer to those grounds as arbitrary, I'm with you, Commissioner Bowerly. I don't want to get into the middle of you know, perhaps what is a commercial dispute. But CTIA maintained back in 2010 when we were first here, and now that that it will employ its typical, normal, and usual commercial standards, and it may have to create, you know, new ones here, you know, because these are political committees, and as noted in our request, there may be unique factors here in the sense that, well, how do you determine if this is going to be a viable potential user of the service? You know, is it going to be commercially reasonable for the carriers to take on this project? But at the end of the day, these are all commercial considerations. They will result, I have no doubt, in not allowing access to every single political committee that wants access. But that's a commercial decision to be made by the wireless service providers who aren't going to be using political considerations in arriving at that commercial determination.
And is there any more detail you can provide us on that? You said that you may have to create new ones. Maybe you could help us understand what your existing ones are. Is it about the projected size of the number of messages it's both number and dollar amounts that you're interested in, right? Both volume and dollar amounts, because that's, you get paid off of percentages. And I guess since I don't know your industry, I don't know if that means 10% of political committees will be able to use this, or 2%, or 98%. And maybe you don't know that either, and that's the challenge we're at this beginning stage of this.
You're right, and I don't know the answer to that. And the example we provided in our request explained volume. We use that as an example that, you know, perhaps it's only presidential campaigns, because the wireless service providers reach the business, you know, have in their own business judgment, that is a sufficient amount of volume to justify their costs. But that's not a political consideration. I mean, that's again just a commercial business decision, which will necessarily exclude some political committees, which, as I read the draft of MCUBE 2, is recognized, just as it has been recognized by the commission in past advisory opinions.
Sure. And I think that's fair. The commission has recognized that. I think if you have any additional information on that are able to submit that, I think that would be helpful, because from my perspective, it would be good to know if we can estimate an impact, understand what we are approving, because it could be, if the reality is there's never going to be any commercial viability to that, then we'd like to know that. I would certainly like to know that, too. I'm not, you know, obviously it's going to be very difficult to do any hard estimates, but if there are other factors or if you've done any analysis that you're willing to share at this point, I think it would be, while they may not be political considerations, I still think the commission, at least I would like to know what, if we're saying yes to this plan and giving you all these guarantees, what do we expect the impact might be of this program?
If I could just add as well, I mean, this goes back to the comment that was filed. Media companies, and that's really what we're talking about here, this is a form of media, have to make these distinctions, you know, have business criteria, and the commenter notes this, you know, or at least I shouldn't say notes it, but raises this as an issue in the text message context. Well, you know, cable providers, you know, they run advertising, but, you know, they aren't required to run, you know, every single, you know, issue ad, for example. And so there is, these businesses are in the business of making money and doing it in a commercially viable way. So it's not as though this is going to be a new form of media and a new entree for them. And so I suspect it will take some time before they really have a good, firm understanding about the extent to which these services really can be offered in a commercially viable way. But it's not the first time that vendors have had to make some of these distinctions.
Absolutely. And I completely understand that. I'm just, as you point out, this is a new area.
Yep.
So if there's any additional information on that, I would appreciate it.
And I have 2 points relative to that. MCUBE is going to be very happy to collaborate if CTIA would like on any kind of supplemental information that you may like, Commissioner, so that there is, again, no light shining between how MCUBE and CTIA would look at those business practices. You know, I think the second point on that goes to whether or not an in-kind contribution would be occurring under any of these business practices, because, you know, at bottom what we're looking at is a campaign finance issue that if a corporation said yes to one and no to a similar other, you can make the argument that that's an in-kind contribution by providing services to one and not to the other, even if those services were, you know, charged at fair market value. There's a lot of ways an in-kind contribution could occur in political discrimination, let's say, for political reasons between equal customers would be one of the things that, you know, we would want to avoid for the campaign finance issue. One thing that wouldn't be, I think, a campaign finance issue on business practices is what we alluded to in, you know, our letter, where we have to maybe tinker with some of the ways in which the carriers and MCUBE, for example, have items in, you know, the text prompts that go back to people who are texting. For example, the, you know, the help prompt. If the help prompt that is sometimes put in replies to people who wish to text won't fit here, and it may not fit because of the campaign finance requirement that you put on us, which is have an attestation, make sure that attestation is clear. If other aspects of the typical, you know, ordinary course of business would, for example, crowd that out and make the attestation unclear, well, then all of a sudden our political committees are outside of the safe harbor, which means that you may not have that screening that was very important to MCUBE 1. And I think that what we've done is, in order to, you know, make sure that there's no campaign finance violation, either by, you know, not having an attestation or possibly letting contributions go through that, you know, we don't want, you know, we'll work out, I think, other ways with the carriers to make sure that the help prompt, you know, is available, maybe through links to websites and such. But we want to make sure that, you know, if there is any bending in typical business practices between, you know, the carriers and an aggregator and a political committee, it doesn't create an unexpected FEC violation.
Any other questions or comments? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you all. Helpful as always. It's unusual when counsel comes in and offers us line edits on the drafts, but, you know, we'll take all the help we can get. As we've noted, the draft that we made blue was circulated to even to us late in the day yesterday, and I know commissioners are still reviewing it and will be interested in hearing any comments that come in between now and next week from you or from anybody else. There were aspects of the questions that I didn't think we had left unclear, but apparently we did. So it's good to clarify those things. I wouldn't think there would be I don't think we intended to create confusion about whose responsibility it is to comply with the Act. And, you know, ultimately it's the committees that file the reports, so they have to be in a position to file those reports accurately. And, you know, perhaps some confusion has arisen over time because when we're not talking directly to the people who are filing those reports, and we say, well, you know, there have to be assurances that the law is going to be complied with, I can see how that kind of confusion may be created, that, you know, now it's somebody else's responsibility to make sure that all of these obligations are met. And you know, I think ultimately it is on the committees, and they have to make sure they're doing business with people who are in a position to provide them with the information that they need to provide to the commission and ultimately to the public. I also was very interested in the comment and would appreciate more information on the availability of this service on a, you know, if distinctions are going to be made, that they're only going to be made on a commercial basis and not on any partisan or political basis or based on a particular candidate's points of view, that would be troubling to me. And the comment also raised several other questions that I would be happy to have any of your comments on either now or in writing before next week or before the close of business Tuesday. It's been suggested that political committees might be able to get negotiate a lower rate. That might be lower than commercial, but perhaps certainly higher than the zero that is sometimes available to nonprofits, or at least has been on occasion in the past. And if you have any thoughts on whether that's an option, and if so, you know, under what circumstances it might be available, I'd be happy to hear them. Because again, we don't want to. It sounds kind of good in concept that, you know, political committees are more like nonprofits than like commercial enterprises, and maybe they ought to be able to negotiate a break if they can do so on a basis that's fair across the board with other political committees. But, again, that could raise issues under the Act if political committees are getting a benefit that other groups aren't entitled to. So if you have any thoughts on whether there might be other groups that might be similarly situated to political committees that or that you in your normal business practice do offer discounts to, or how any discounts get negotiated in this industry, I think that would be informative to us. Any of the other issues that are raised by that comment or any other comments that happen to come in, I think it would be helpful to get comments on the comments.
Can do.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner McGann?
Throw it out to get thoughts on another comment that came in from the National Defense PAC. Bill McGinley represents them, and he makes two points. One, this shouldn't qualify for an expedited review because it really doesn't deal with a specific transaction related to an election. I kind of think it does, but maybe the request actually doesn't tie it to the upcoming election, so maybe it is general, but maybe we make the record clear that it is tied to something that gets us into the expedited. And he makes a larger point that really this should be a rulemaking, not an AO. And that makes some sense on the one hand, because we have the previous CTIA AO, which in my view needs to be fixed. And then we have the comment from, I get the commenter's name, Sam LaReef represents them, which is the comment that Commissioner Barrelly raised, that they tell us that they have an AO in the pipeline that hasn't quite been finalized. And what you don't want to do is wake up as a commissioner and do an AO and then realize the next guy comes in and you put yourself in a box or the next technology is a problem. So I certainly agree with the National Defense PAC idea that if this continues to get more complicated, we probably do need to take a look at a rulemaking, but I'm not sure why that needs to hold current activity hostage. But I'd just like to get your learned thoughts on how to address this commenter, because he raises valid points.
Mm-hmm. 2 points. First of all, on the expedited nature of this opinion, I think the answer would be, oh, yeah, please. there are a lot of elections, primary elections, that are just around the corner, and, of course, the conventions or the general election. There are a lot of candidate committees who are very interested in finalizing contracts. And they're kind of at a holding position right now because they're looking for, you know, guidance from counsel, who will only give it after getting guidance from the commission as to how to finish up some of these contracts. And The second comment I agree with, and I think that the advisory opinion process is a good laboratory to create an understanding of the commission and the regulated community as to how this technology, you know, can fit in with campaign finance issues, which is the reason that we're here, to make sure that the financing doesn't let contributions creep into the system that you don't want, and make sure that the disclosure is there for the contributions that you do want. And this laboratory of advisory opinions is a very good way to help set out the very general, you know, provisions of the law that, you know, we help interpret into our facts. And then after, you know, this, maybe this election cycle, we will be the first in line to come back to ask for some regulations on the basis of our experience. Our experience is probably going to be somewhat limited, because at the present time, I'm not aware of any non-candidate committee customers that are, you know, going to be creating text messages between now and the general election. So I think that the commenter's, you know, concern that there may be an awful lot of political committees looking at getting started at this, I think that may be too many at the beginning. And as our comment suggested, you know, we are focusing, we, MCUBE, are focusing in on candidate committees right now, because they seem to be the ones that are most keen on the project, and I think the ones that have spent the most time on the disclaimers, the attestations, the $50 and the $200 limits, and then making sure that the ordinary course of business is accorded to for candidate committees.
Just for fun, CTIA, the expedited issue. And I get, we were assuming this is a continuation of what we've already done. There were comments from campaigns, and it's in the air, but I just want to make sure the record's clear that this is tied to something that brings it within the expedited to address the concern and the comment.
I think MCUBE's counsel, I mean, we asked for expedition based on the agency's new AO policies, so I don't have an opinion on formally whether or not this qualifies as an expedited request under the relevant statutory provision, since we didn't ask for consideration under that provision.
But you are coming within the more recent commission policy?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. As to your other question about the rulemaking, I don't have an opinion, learned or otherwise, as to whether or not this would be more appropriately taken up in a rulemaking. Obviously, the CTIA and the carriers there are issues to be resolved, and, you know, we leave it to the discretion of the commission and potential petitioners for rulemakings to decide on how to proceed in that regard.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the suggestion of the commenter that we this would be a good topic for a rulemaking is a good one. And indeed, when we put out our rulemaking priorities list, we noted that text messaging could be covered in a rulemaking on that addresses a host of issues under the broad category of electronic contributions. You know, there's a lot of technological changes that have happened since the commission last took a look at those regs, and I think they would benefit from reexamination and from comment, public comment from all the folks who are out there doing it. I don't think that's a reason to not give people advice when they come in and ask for it, because, you know, politics happens in real time, and you all have questions and your clients have questions, and I think we need to answer them, and we need to answer them expeditiously. But I think, as my colleagues know, I've been advocating that we really do need to take up this whole issue of electronic new technologies and new ways of making contributions, and even some old ways that maybe, you know, our rules aren't quite up to dealing with them. They're not operating at the speed of the internet in some respects. You know, and I think practically speaking, that rulemaking probably could not be completed between now and the election, but would be a good, you know, maybe that's not such a bad thing, because then we will have the experience of this election cycle and all of the things that people are going to be doing when we do consider rulemaking. But I'd be in favor of doing that.
Commissioner Walther.
By the way, thank you very much for all the help you've given us on this. And I think that's one reason why I looked at it, these complicated issues, and thought the same thing, that rulemaking would be great. We hear points of view from everybody. Everybody can pitch in. It's a little wider group of people who might be involved, maybe get some more technical experts in here, help us out. In the past, once in a while, rarely, we get some technical help that we hire to help us. And so, and I think like the advisory opinion with regarding Google and Facebook, those are all new to us, and trying to figure out, okay, you know, where is the technology now? Where is the technology going? Is what we do now going to cripple something in the future? So it's been frustrating, but it's also been energizing, and I think very educational for us, just like you say, to put us through the hoops now. So we can learn by ourselves, by the force of the AO process, what some of these issues are, how they're being thought about. So it'll make for a better rulemaking.
I agree.
I think we should do it, though. I think we owe it to the public to have it in a set of rules so that people don't have to go through M-Cube 1, M-Cube 2, and let's see here. And Mr. Engel said this at the hearing, and you know, and so people really know out there where we are and what the law is. It's a better guidance. But as far as the expedition goes, I think you know, the time is now, and we're going to try and get it done next week.
Thank you.
But thanks again,
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A technical question that again, you could feel free to answer in writing, but I'm not sure I fully understand the notion of the premium programs versus perhaps, I don't know what the non-premium programs are, standard programs, and how these different rates are calculated and who gets them, and how they might apply to political committees. I think that would be useful background information for us to have.
I wanted to ask about a specific part of the draft, page 14, line 12. This is in relation to a couple of different things that have come up so far in the discussion. Right now, the draft says that so long as the requirements from the carriers are based on commercial rather than political considerations. And that might be, in the factual situation, what your organizations are willing to say. But as a legal matter, I'm not sure that we can say political considerations, because there might be times where some could interpret a commercial consideration as being political. So I wanted to, my inclination is to delete the rather than political from this draft, but I wanted to get some comments on that. Mr. Burns.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I think that raises an issue that I think Commissioner Bowerly was alluding to, and that is, at some point, do some of these political factors bleed into the commercial analysis? You know, how well is the candidate polling? You know, I can see a situation where a wireless service provider only wants to take candidates polling at a high level because they've got capacity to pull in more, you know, higher volume of contributions. Well, that is you're right. That's a political consideration, but it's not the determinative factor. It's a commercial factor that is going to be used to apply that political consideration. So I agree that being careful with that language and the reference to political considerations is warranted.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Engel, were you going to comment as well?
You know, I would agree with that, because, you know, I think you can find two kinds of problems. You know, a problem where someone in, you know, a corporate setting has the intent of making a distinction between two candidates that are similarly situated. Or maybe over a period of time, the decisions have the effect of treating a class of candidates differently than maybe should. You know, I think that intentional distinctions for political or partisan reasons are something that are going to be avoided. I can't imagine in this situation that you would have any kind of commercial decisions that would have the intent of making distinctions between candidates that there should be no distinction made. But you also want to make sure that at the end of your election cycle that all of the decisions that you made didn't have an inadvertent effect of, you know, helping one over another that may have had, you know, a partisan effect. But I would also note that in addition to the campaign finance practices of wanting to avoid a in-kind contribution, that the industry as a whole has dedicated itself to a lot of voluntary standards that the carriers and the aggregators and other people in the industry want to follow themselves in a self-regulatory way. And I would imagine that there are principles in those standards that are applying maybe in their decisions on, you know, other commercial or charitable decisions that they would also want to abide by, you know, in this particular situation as well. To get a more detailed response, I'm going to collaborate, I think, with CTIA counsel in any replies that he would like to draft in response to that question, or maybe in anticipation of the finalization of CTIA 2.
Commissioner McGann?
Let me ask you a hypothetical. Let's assume there are candidates running on various party lines that, other than those who are members of those parties, everyone else thinks is bad news. Say the Nazi Party, the Communist Party, White Supremacist Party. Mm-hmm. And those candidates want to get in on this and do text donations, but it turns out that as soon as that gets out, the corporate boycott operation kicks into high gear on your various clients. You then say, gee, we don't want to touch this. In the eyes of the people on the ballot, it's for political reasons. From where I sit, it's purely for commercial reasons, because you're not going to put yourself out of business to be some sort of egalitarian, you know, speech place. I mean, you're not the government, right? The government can't discriminate on views, but private businesses, for commercial reasons, can. And at some point, commercial versus political dissolves. You guys are not political committees. You're not in campaigns and elections. You're trying to make a profit, and in America, that's what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, maybe something does become an in-kind. So this is an issue that I see is going to cause us some issues here. Because, you know, the comment that came in from the we'll call it the future AO requester, they've asked it, but I guess it's not ripe. I mean, they claim and they say in 2007, for example, Verizon denied a pro-choice group an application for a common short code, citing an internal policy, and then they revisited its decision. And then the medical marijuana people couldn't use it, but then it was citing some internal non-compliance with some sort of, you know, rules. And their point is that you can reverse engineer these seemingly objective rules to exclude certain speakers. Right. You're not the government, so, you know, I mean, not to go current offense, but, you know, some people want to eat a Chick-fil-A, some people don't. It's kind of the way it is, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But it is an issue, and I see it's going to be an issue for several commissioners, and not so much me. But if you see everything, even political concerns, as commercial, it becomes a lot easier to square this with campaign finance. But if you see this as the comment sort of suggests that there's some sort of the gist of what they're saying without saying explicitly, it seems like there's some selective. There's policy preferences being used. I don't think that's it. I think it's commercial. So you guys can address that in terms that may speak to what's driving this comment. I think that would help, because I see this as an issue. It's not an issue for me because I think you guys operate on commercial bases, and if political considerations come up, it's as a subset of the commercial consideration. I'm not sure everyone's going to see it as a subset of commercial. They may see it as two separate mm-hmm. considerations, and it may cause you some issues. So anyone want to take a shot at my hypothetical?
Well, I'll start off by saying you are right. M-Cube is in the business of making money and attracting as many clients as it possibly can. And at the moment, we are focusing in on candidate committees. And over a period of time, and I think the regulatory process that you're talking about, maybe the way in which we can, you know, drill into this in a more factual basis, because again, we're looking at a campaign finance perspective, and if you are talking about two, you know, organizations that are not political committees, then I'm not sure that we wander into campaign finance issues if they are the commercial decisions that you're talking about, whether or not you want to support a particular, you know, point of view. I think that you have a legitimate concern with your campaign finance jurisdiction if political committees may be treated differently so that one is getting an in-kind contribution because another political committee is not having access. So that is the concern that we as an aggregator would want to guard against in making sure that when we are looking at political committees, that we are dealing with them in a way that we certainly don't have the intent of making any sort of a discriminatory decision, but we also don't want to have the effect of having done that, you know, as we would review the track record. I'm in the luxurious position of not, you know, having to represent issue groups and carriers at the moment, so I would like to say I'm done with this question.
it's been around for a while, though, that those in business to make a profit regularly, and you raised this point earlier, regularly do exclude certain messages. I think of it in TV ads. You could have an ad perfectly true. Could be a political party wants to air it. Could be one of the mainstream political parties. But the station decides that it's just too hot for prime time. Literally, they don't want to show it, you know, in the middle of family hour, and they just won't air the ad. No one's ever suggested, I don't think, at least seriously, that that's an in-kind contribution to the other team. Because otherwise, we get into this sort of more equal speech kind of thing. Stations are free to air what they want to air other than the candidate use requirements.
Mm-hmm.
I would think the same principle would translate into this. If for some reason you take on a certain, you provide the backbone for a certain kind of candidate that causes you to lose all your other customers, certainly that's a political consideration, but that's really a commercial consideration. So maybe CTIA can develop the answer a little bit more than maybe Mr. Engel did.
No, I'm not sure I'm going to have much to add to that summation. I mean, when you look at these comments, the commenters aren't suggesting that Verizon denied the pro-choice group application because Verizon is institutionally anti-choice, or that T-Mobile is against medical marijuana. It was, you know, these are controversial social issues that they just don't want to be in the business of period, paragraph, end of discussion. They just don't want to touch it. Bad for business. And we alluded to that in our request, too, that, you know, the carriers are still considering whether they want to get into this business at all. And that's why one of our questions was to confirm that if a carrier decides, you know, we just don't want to touch this, we don't want to touch it at all because the commission is telling us we've got to give it to every single political committee who asks, or for whatever other reason, that the carriers want to be comfortable that they can be out of this business, because the concerns Commissioner McGann raised are live concerns. They're the concerns that animated this comment, although I don't think the conclusion reached in the comment is fair. But those are real live business concerns, and why CTIA in its request wanted to confirm the ability of the carriers just to get out of this business altogether if, in fact, it's going to put them, if the requirements are such that it's going to put them in a position where they've got to enter into a controversial space that is bad for their business. But it's not because they prefer one political candidate or another, or one issue over another.
And even if that were part of it, it's still a commercial consideration. Let's make it simpler. Say you're a polling firm, and you do one. You know, you polling firms tend to be partisan.
Mailing firms, and mail shops too.
Yeah, mail shops too. Right. Even some law firms tend to be associated one party over the other. So you call a pollster, you call Dave Sackett at Terrence Group, and you're a Democratic candidate, and say, Dave, I want you to do a poll, and he says, no. You know, I only do Republicans. It's not an in-kind from the Terrence Group to the Republican candidate somehow. That's just a business decision. And he, you know, I'm sure believes in what he does and does it because of political reasons. That's how he got in the game originally. But at a certain point, you have to, you know, pick sides. And that happens all throughout political consulting and that kind of thing. And even if a company decided certain candidates were too hot for prime time, that doesn't result in an in-kind. The comment that we're talking about doesn't come out and say it directly. What they do say directly is the commission, should be aware that in requesting such confirmation, CTIA may be, in effect, asking the commission to approve CTIA's current practice of arbitrarily and inconsistently applying self-imposed industry standards in a way which may make it impossible as a practical matter for federal political committees to avail themselves of the text messaging contribution system approved by the commission in AO 2012-17, M-cubed, we'll call it M-cubed-1. There's a lot in that sentence, because it puts in what you subjectively may be asking. I take it from your comments that's not what you're asking. So that knocks down the comment there. You're not asking to approve arbitrary and inconsistently application of self-imposed industry standards. That's not what you're asking, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I don't take it you agree that they're arbitrarily and inconsistently applied.
No, we've represented that we are intending to apply our normal and usual commercial practices.
Okay. And the part that I really care about, that all this is done to essentially making it impossible for political committees to avail themselves of this. You're willing to provide this to federal political committees?
If it's commercially viable.
Exactly.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As my colleague indicated, we may have slight different perspectives on this issue. I know you didn't. It was a suggestion of the chair. Wasn't your suggestion that we delete the phrase rather than political from that sentence? You are asking us to bless a policy of exclusion of some groups on some basis. So if you know, personally, I liked the phrase commercial rather than political considerations, because I wouldn't want to see it apply. I wouldn't want to be seen as blessing somebody else's program of excluding people on, you know, for partisan reasons or anything of that nature. And I hear you that's not your, you know, I appreciate what you've already said, that's not your intent. But if you could suggest some other language that would make sense to you and might provide some comfort to those of us who have those concerns and want to be sensitive to those concerns. If you don't like that phrase, you got another phrase that you think might work better that, you know, wouldn't disadvantage your commercial operations, I'd be interested in hearing your suggestions on that as well. And again, as always, you know, feel free to think about it and send it to us in a written comment.
Right. Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate that setting aside the comment, I think you've heard Commissioner Weintraub and I raise questions and concerns, and any additional information you can provide us about what sorts of criteria, because of course you all get to decide what's commercially reasonable, and I don't think my colleague is intending to snatch victory from the jaws, defeat from the jaws of victory here, but whatever mail houses do or political consultants do, I don't believe you're asking us for the a request that's an advisory opinion that says you can discriminate based on a political party. I think I've heard MQ say that explicitly. I don't think that's what CTIA is telling us. So, you know, setting aside all the hypotheticals, there's still a concern. And if partisan versus political, but when you tell us that, you know, carriers are concerned about avoiding these controversial issues, I fear that everything in our political campaigns right now is viewed as controversial by some subset of Americans. So I think we want to better understand a little bit about what that is. And maybe, you know, nonprofit groups are treated differently from political campaigns because, frankly, issues like choice and other controversial issues, gay marriage, are involved in almost every campaign going on in this country right now. So I think it would be helpful to the extent you're able to give us some additional information about that or assurances in terms of what types of considerations you'll be using and why those are commercial rather than political. Because I think, as you noted, at some point, it could be possible to turn access to these services into in-kind contributions. And that line may be difficult to find, and if you can help us find it, that would be greatly appreciated.
I think there's a distinction. This comes up a lot in a lot of our advisory opinion requests between what factual representations requesters are making and what becomes part of the legal analysis. And what people are often concerned about is adding somebody's factual representation into a legal one may bind somebody else in the future. So even if you're saying today, you know, we don't care about partisan politics, that to me is a factual representation that shouldn't bind somebody else going forward who might want to, you know, only provide services to Republicans or Democrats. I want to go back and look at sort of the premise of question four, and I'm not even sure. I think the answer should just be yes, it's not an in-kind contribution. I'm not even sure that we need to get into a lot of this, at least in the legal analysis section. And, you know, I think we're not trying to drag, you know, to take away a victory here. We're just trying to make sure that it's not overly burdensome and cumbersome for not only people who are doing this now, but in the future. Commissioner Bowerly.
I would just note that, of course, we answer the request that's before us. And, you know, based on the proposal, if there's a yes to that, anyone else who is similarly situated and doesn't have facts that are materially different can, of course, rely on it. I think the question would be is whether those facts are material. And it seems to me that that would depend on perhaps where the next set of votes might lie and another opinion. But that's, I think, that is an area that we've had some, you know, discussion about. But we, of course, you all are entitled to an answer on your request as you presented it to us, and those facts are a part of that request.
I think if we say so long as the requirements are based on commercial rather than political considerations, that to me is a legal, it's part of the answer in a legal way that does, it is, I can't imagine that that's not a material fact going forward for the next guy. So maybe there's a way of writing it that separates it out, and I'm certainly willing to entertain any language on that. Commissioner McGann?
Read the whole sentence. This answer is not altered if the application of those requirements results in the committee being able to receive contributions via text message and other political committees not being able to do so long as the requirements are based on commercial rather than political considerations. Well, the only reason that sentence would be in there is to suggest the answer would be altered if it's based on political considerations. I think that's the loose line. If we don't need to reach the question to get the answer that they want, then we don't need to get there at all, but to sort of say, well, the answer might change, suggest the answer might change, doesn't give them really any guidance at all. It's another one of these things where we get to say we said yes, but really we're saying yes with so many belt suspenders, Velcro, and duct tape on the pants, you're never going to be able to walk with it. So that's the concern. It's an illusory yes unless we just answer the question asked.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think it would be productive or result in a good product if we try sitting here today to rewrite particular paragraphs. Writing AOs at the table, I think, is generally not a good idea. But I do think that, and fortunately we have a few days, so we can, you know, work on language that will hopefully be acceptable to everybody. Because I think there is a lot of interest in on all commissioners' parts in making sure that we are, you know, providing opportunities for people to take advantage of new technologies in fundraising. But I do think that a requester is entitled to make it easy for us. They are entitled to come in and say, here are our facts. We understand different commissioners might have different concerns, and we are willing to do X, Y, Z, and Q to make sure that everybody's happy. And they're entitled on their facts to get, if indeed, you know, that does make everybody happy, they're entitled to get a yes that says, under these circumstances, yes, go forth. But that's the difference between an AO and a rulemaking. We're not setting standards for everybody else who potentially could come in later with different facts. If there are different facts, there are different facts. So they can come in and get an AO, or as I've said, I think it would be productive to have a rulemaking on this. But, you know, if you want to come, I think that you've been tremendously helpful and gone to great lengths through both of these advisory opinions to try and craft a request that will get a yes. And I think that's to your credit, and I appreciate it. And I don't think we ought to hold up a yes for you if indeed that's where people want to go, because we're afraid that somebody else who might want to do something a little bit different might not get comfort from this AO. You know, if they want to do something different, they can come in and ask their own AO. Does the answer change if we want to do X instead of Y? That's their problem. That's not your problem.
Commissioner McGinn.
But it is their problem. It is this request, because what one calls a political concern, someone else may call a commercial concern. Now, if we're going to agree that whatever they are doing is commercial as a matter of law and not political, that's fine. But I'm not sure that's what everyone's willing to do on this AO, and that's my point. When I'm not worried about the next AO. I'm worried about this AO, because they could get a yes and then proceed as they are, and then one candidate doesn't, for whatever reason, fit within whatever criteria they have, files a complaint, and then all of a sudden in the MER, we want to say, well, you know, maybe this is political. This could be political. And next thing you know, there might be RTB and all kinds of discovery, and then we're asking them under oath, is this political or commercial? And then we're going to sit here in judgment as to whether or not what they did was commercial or political. All because that seems to be, and sure enough, the AO will be cited for the proposition that there is a distinction, because that's what it says. I mean, AOs get cited in other AOs. It'd be nice if they were one shot only, but they're not. I mean, the CTIA first AO, the language that is now a problem is based upon a 1991 AO that was cited as if it was coming down from Sinai itself. It's not. I mean, they're AOs, and that's really the answer to the comment about there should be a rulemaking. Yes, there should be, but for me, simply because you give an AO today, that doesn't bind you in a rulemaking tomorrow. But sometimes people fear that it does, and then the AO coming down the pike seems to suggest that they don't want the political considerations to be able to be factored in. So that makes it easier to say, I'm not worried about that AO, I'm worried about this AO, and this is kind of why you're back here with part two. Is the first one was part one. Part one was a yes, but then when we got into the details, maybe it wasn't really a yes. It let us say yes and act as if we said yes, but it really wasn't a yes. It was a sort of with a lot of stuff, and now the stuff is in front of us.
Any other comments? It doesn't look like there's any other questions. Any parting shots? Anything? As we're going to keep the record open until Tuesday, August 7th. And if that changes, we'll let everybody know. And at this point, as I said earlier, we're planning on voting on this via tally vote next week.
Very good.
That's the plan.
That's good.
And we anticipate receiving some additional comments from the requesters at some point in the near future.
Yes.
Any other questions or comments? Excellent. Thank you very much again for joining us. It was very helpful.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That was the last matter on the agenda. So, Mr. Palmer, are there any management and administrative matters to discuss? Oh, sorry, Commissioner Peterson.
If I could just have a moment of personal privilege. I just want to acknowledge tomorrow is the last day that Cody Rogers, who's sitting behind me, will be serving as an intern in my office. He's been here for the last 2 months and has served very ably and done great work for us. And so I just wanted to acknowledge his efforts. He'll be returning to University of Virginia, where he'll be a second year at the law school there, and where he'll continue his education in the law and in softball in the coming years. So, I wanted to commend him for the great work he's done in my office this summer.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.